Healthy Talk with Dr. Michael Smith, MD. And now, here's the country doctor with a city education, Dr. Mike.
All right, so do you know the four pillars of longevity? Now, some of these things, if you've been a member of Life Extension where I work as the senior health scientist, you know, some of these things we're going to cover today, you might be aware of, but I always think it's good to go over what research is constantly showing to be true, and that's what these four pillars are about. So we're going to talk about physical activity, mental prowess, stable mood, and proper nutrition. And my guest is Dr. Dennis Kravitz. He's author of A Sound Mind and a Sound Body, Live Long and Live Healthy, and he's going to help us succeed with each one of these pillars. Dr. Kravitz, welcome to Healthy Talk.
Great to be with you.
So let's get right into this. You know, we don't have a lot of time, so we got physical activity. Let's start right there. And what has research shown us about physical activity and longevity? You know, how long do I need to work out? What kind? How many days a week? Can I take it in a pill? Have we done exercise in a pill yet? So tell us about physical activity and longevity.
Well, this one's pretty easy. The research is very, very clear, and the National Institutes of Health are also recommending the same things that the research shows. But basically, you have two options. If you want to do a less demanding workout, you should be exercising five times a week, 30 minutes per session. This could be something like walking or bicycling at a modest pace. If you want a more vigorous workout, this would be like jogging instead of walking. You can get away with 3 to 4 workouts per week, 20 minutes per session of something that's more intense. So these two both amount to the same thing for the typical person. You get just as much benefit either way. So it's up to you if you want a more demanding or less demanding workout.
Is there any information on the importance of muscle tone and muscle building to longevity?
Not with longevity proper. It's helpful. We've found that doing weight work in addition to regular aerobic exercise is a benefit, and that gets more associated with our muscle tone. But if we're doing regular aerobic exercise, it probably goes without saying it's going to tone the muscles a great deal, particularly since aerobics involve the use of the legs. That means your calves and thighs in particular are going to get toned up automatically. But if we're talking about other parts of the body, the arms, the chest, adding in some weight work is kind of the ideal thing to do along with aerobic exercise.
Yeah, I've had a lot of success with doing kind of like a circuit type training where I'll do some aerobics in one little station and then move to do some weight training. And that seems to work well for me, a little bit easier on my knees and my ankles. So I know a lot of people are interested in that. That's, you know, you can go online and look up circuit training. So physical activity, pretty straightforward. Of course, it is straightforward, right? But not everybody is doing this, right? Most people are not exercising the way they should. How do we get people more motivated to get out there?
I'm a psychologist, so I do much of my time is spent working with people one-on-one or classes of about 30 or speeches in front of big audiences. And I try to take them through the research and explain a little bit about what goes on inside of your body. When I do that, they are totally convinced that they ought to do these things. Then you just tell them, here's what you need to do, and then they go out and do it. If you just tell people what to do, many people resist because they don't like being told what to do, or they don't understand why they should do this, so they push back against you. So you have to know how to, the average person thinks to really get kind of inside of their mind, get them motivated to do the right things.
I kind of like that idea of being maybe a little more specific with patients and people about why they need to be doing this and what those exact benefits are. So we know we need to get out there. We need to exercise more. Dennis, let's look into the next pillar here, which is my mind, my brain, my cognition. How does that connect to longevity?
Well, very importantly, 40% of people who live to be 85 and older will have either Alzheimer's or dementia. So if we look at that on a volume basis, it's actually even more active in terms of being treated for it than people who have cardiovascular disease at the same age. So it's a very important factor that's going to affect a lot of people. And the great news is, if you do things correctly, about 75 to 90% of this is avoidable. So we don't have to step towards cognitive decline a little bit each year. We can avoid it completely if we really do things correctly. research.
You know, go ahead, Dennis.
The research here is divided kind of two areas that, once again, we're back to aerobic exercise, which surprises many people as to why this would correlate with cognitive health, but it actually provides better blood flow, more nutrients, more oxygen being brought to the brain every day. So those people who do regular aerobic exercise also are much less likely to have cognitive decline later on in life. The other half of it, about 40%, I estimate, comes from the aerobic exercise. 60% is what I call cognitive enrichment. And this can be done by just working a white-collar job on an ongoing basis and not retiring. For people who don't want to do that, you can do volunteer work. For people who don't want to do that, we have all kinds of things that they've heard about before, the crossword puzzles, the board games that involve strategy or solving puzzles, taking college classes at any age, taking up new hobbies in retirement. People do this to themselves. A lot of their cognitive decline comes from the fact with each advancing decade, they're less physically active. And then when they retire, the learning on the job, which would have helped them maintain cognitive health, goes away. They sit around the house every day, running a couple of errands, staring out the window. They don't know what to do. And that brings about the actual decline itself.
Well, you know, just real quickly, we'll get on to the next pillar, but one of the oldest patients I ever took care of back in Dallas when I was a resident, her name was Babe, and I asked what her secret was, and she went every semester to the local community college, which for her age, they were free classes, and she learned something new every semester. She just had finished learning how to develop websites, and she was in her 90s. I thought that was pretty awesome. Let's go to the – yeah, this is pretty good. I don't know if I'll be doing that. Well, maybe I will. Hopefully I'll be blessed enough to get up there in that age, and maybe I'll make websites. I don't know. What about stable mood now? This is the third pillar you mentioned. And first of all, maybe we need to define what stable mood means and then how we can achieve that.
Well, we really have two areas to focus on here. And at a quick glance, sometimes they – seem like they're just the opposite ends of a same continuum, but they are now the research is kind of pointing that these are actually different things and not the same thing. But one is to have a positive attitude. That doesn't mean just having a smiley face, but being positive about next year, the year after next, about your own future. Here in the U.S., we have a very youth-oriented culture. Everyone's focused on being young, looking young, looking younger than one's own age, and so on. And really, unfortunately, that's going to fly right in your face when it comes to living longer. But the research has shown that about 7.5 years of life extension are possible just by having a very positive attitude about your own future. This is easier to do when you're 25, but when you're 65 or 85, it really gets stretched. The other half of this is to avoid any prolonged anxiety, stress, or depression. None of us can go through life by saying, I'm never going to be stressed again, I'm never going to be anxious again. We're all going to face that, but it's how we cope with it that makes the difference. We have to learn coping strategies, and as a psychologist, I constantly train people when they're at work, when they're at home, driving a car, something bad happens to you where you become more anxious or stressed, how to relieve it right then and there.
So that's stable. So we have physical activity, you know, cognition, stable mood. The last pillar is obviously important, proper nutrition. We only have about 10 seconds left so we get you branded, Dennis. Can you just tell us one of your favorite longevity foods?
Well, I would say the biggest, most important thing to do is just avoid saturated fat.
Okay.
That's it. And then,
how about I like my cruciferous vegetables. I know that those are really good, a lot of good compounds in them. So there you go, four pillars, well-researched in science. You can check it out at A Sound Mind and A Sound Body, Live Long, Live Healthy by Dr. Dennis Kravitz. Check out that book. This is Healthy Talk on Radio MD. I'm Dr. Mike. Stay well.